The Nail in the Coffin!
All right, welcome to The Nail in the Coffin, part of the world-famous Evergreen Podcast Network. Saturday morning, the Cavs season, unfortunately, has come to an end. And for a little postmortem here, joined by friend of the show, Mark Mazzaros. Mez, you and I texted all season, went to a couple games together, figured no better person to catch up with here as we put a bow on this season. I am bummed out.
Yeah, same here. I'm sort of picking myself off the floor. As you know, I had a work thing last night, and I ended up watching the game on a really significant delay. I went dark on social media and my phone, so I didn't finish the game until late. And then, you know, I'm wired, so I have the new 4K set of the Godfather movies. So, you know, spoiler alert for The Godfather, but I watched up until Michael takes out Sollozzo and McCluskey before going to bed. So I'm still, you do what you got to do to get through these nights, but it was a tough one. It was a tough one.
Well, Trey Young treated us like we were Mo Green at the end there.
I don't want to say Trey Young can sleep with the fishes, but.
You know
that
what?
Guy can shoot, man. Yeah, hats off. He played a.
What was so frustrating is I can't stand him, and it's not even because of some of the stuff he does to just embrace being a villain with taunting the crowd and stuff like that. I actually kind of like that stuff. That doesn't bother me at all. What drives me nuts about him typically is the grifting, the begging for foul calls and getting cheap fouls drawn and getting a ridiculous number of free throws. And honest to God, like last night, it wasn't even that. It was all legit. I mean, there was probably a couple calls that were a little questionable, but I mean, by and large, I mean, you know, when he knocked down the three-pointer from, like, standing on the Cavs logo, it was just like, my God. So.
No, you're 100% right. I do want to say, though, as to the grifting, I mean, he'd make a world-class Philadelphia 76er.
Oh, yeah, they're the worst.
Make that happen, and I can fully hate that team as if I'm not there now. But anyways, back to the point. If a guy's gonna drill it from, like, what felt like 10 feet behind the three-point line, I don't know that there's a defense for that, really.
No.
You know, hats off. And, you know, I don't know if you watched the halftime. I was trying to fast forward and catch up, but I did watch a few minutes of Jalen and Stephen A. And they just talk about how, you know, he was quiet. Trae Young's quiet in the first half. And he's known to have these good second halves. And it just hit me. I'm like, oh, he's going to have a great second half. I suddenly, all my optimism just oozed out of my body as a Cleveland fan.
Yeah. Even when the Cavs got out to that big lead early, there was part of me that was still kind of nervous because it felt like Atlanta was getting some good looks and shots just weren't falling. And I was thinking to myself, this team can shoot. And if those shots start going down, we might have our hands full here. And then he heated up. And the one thing that I was thinking about quite a bit was you look at his stat line and you look at Darius Garland's stat line, and you know, Darius ended up with, like, I think 21 and 9.
Correct.
But he took 27 shots to do it. And you know, the huge difference was I felt like the Cavs defensively, they kept getting switched into these matchups where you got guys on Trae Young that you don't want to see guarding him, and it was hard to kind of trap him because you still had to honor their other shooters. I mean, between Herter, Gallinari, Hunter, Bogdanovich, I mean, like, those guys could all, I mean, they posed a legitimate threat. Whereas the Cavs, I mean, Lauri Markkanen shot it well, especially in the first quarter, but Atlanta had a much easier time collapsing onto Darius Garland, and I think it just made it so much harder for him, especially in that second half. The Cavs offense really seemed to bog down. I mean, they got 6 minutes into the fourth quarter, and I think they had 2 points in the fourth. It was just every possession, it was just, you know, swimming upstream.
I was just talking about that topic with another buddy before we got on here, and I totally agree. And, you know, your lineup can't be all things to all people, but you know, I'm a guy who can never have enough shooting. And the fact that it is, you know, if I'm the other coach, I'm blitzing and trapping Garland like all the time, you know, and it's, we don't have as easy time burning them with a three or something that they did. So just to echo your thoughts, I completely agree. I'm not saying it's an easy fix. I love the Tower City lineup, but you know, you wonder if it's the best long-term.
Yeah. And you know, I know a lot of people thought it was kind of strange that Kevin Love only played 10 minutes last night. And when you get into these games, you want someone with veteran experience. And he was one of the few guys that I felt like in Brooklyn on Tuesday night looked comfortable and didn't seem phased by this stage. Garland was another
one. Too big for him.
Yeah. Garland was another one in Brooklyn. I felt like, you know, the moment didn't look too big for him. Mobley, same thing. And obviously long-term it's good to see that. But not getting more Kevin Love last night, especially when the offense was struggling, it seemed odd. But at the same time, there was that stretch, I think, early in the second half where the Cavs brought him in. And Atlanta, it was like two or three straight possessions where they immediately ran a pick and roll to force a switch where Love ended up on Trae Young, and they just abused him. And
yeah,
the Cavs just immediately called a timeout. They took Love out of the game, and he never came back in the rest of the night. And I don't know, maybe, you know, hindsight 2020, you live with that for the trade-off of the offense that you're going to get out of him, hopefully. But at the same time, if you were that concerned about, you know, defensive liabilities, I also thought it was really strange. We never saw Lamar Stevens for the entire game. He never played.
I know.
And you know, he's another one who's offensively challenged at times, but you know, he's kind of that, you know, that junkyard dog defensive player that JB has loved this season. And I felt like at times has played him too much to a fault and like not even see the floor. I thought was surprising. And then, you know, just getting back go ahead.
Well, just they just didn't, you know, Bickerstaff and his coaches know a million things more than I do, obviously. So, but like they just didn't have an answer, whatever button they were trying to push as the game was slipping away. I don't know. I probably would have tried Love at least one more time. Maybe the same thing happened. You pull him right away, but like you were suddenly having trouble scoring. I guess I disagree with your point. Lamar is going to at least go in there and give you, not that no one's not bringing effort in a, that's a good way to say that, Mark. Everyone's bringing effort in a quote unquote postseason game. And, you know, it's not really a problem, but Lamar's going to go in there and give you everything he has. And I would have at least given him a few minutes, given Love a few more minutes, but you know, like you said, hindsight, easy to do.
Yeah. And if you're looking for scoring punch, especially in a home game, Jetty Osmond not seeing the floor at all. And he's a guy who's been in JB's doghouse quite a bit this year. I was a little less surprised that he didn't get in at all.
Right.
And I guess if you're, you know, three quarters of the way through the game, you're not going to bring somebody in for the first time cold off the bench. And, you know, you kind of made your bet at that point. I thought you might have seen a scenario where you try to bring him in for a couple minutes, see if you can get a little bit of a spark there. I think it also really hurt.
They just needed some kind of lift late. And I agree with you. It's tough to bring him in when he hasn't been in all game, but you can get to your mind where, you know, instant offense Chetty off the bench maybe is what you need. I don't know. It's just frustrating.
And the other thing that hurt, I think, was that, you know, I think they were kind of banking on Rondo, giving him a little bit more, which, you know, maybe that's a you're kind of rolling the dice there with where he's at in this stage of his career. You know, I felt like it was a little bit more effective on Tuesday against Brooklyn, running those two point guard lineups, kind of taking a little bit of a burden off of Darius. And last night Rondo just gave you nothing. And those lineups when he was on the floor, I don't think it looked good. And he did not end up playing very much. And I think had he been able to give you a little bit more, that could have taken a little bit of the burden off of Garland. But it just really wasn't meant to be, I guess.
And I thought Garland, and I don't think this is a brilliant insight, but Garland looked, you know, exhausted by the end. I mean, the shots weren't going in anymore. And he's one of those guys, when he takes certain shots, I am willing to like instant bet that they're going in, you know, but it wasn't the case late. I thought that his legs were probably dead. I know the Rubio, my beloved Ricky Rubio, I know the Rubio Garland lineups were deadly, but these Rondo Garland lineups, I'd rather just, you know, swallow your medicine and get a couple more minutes of Garland on the bench when Rubio's out there. I just like, you got to get that kid some more rest.
Yeah. What did you think of Caris LeVert?
In this game or since he's been here?
Yes.
You know, obviously he had the foot injury, so we didn't have as much time to acclimate him as we all would have liked. I mean, you know, injury is obviously one of the major themes of this season. He certainly brought something we didn't have, and he was more of a playmaker. And like, look, I didn't watch a lot of Caris LeVert. I mostly watched the Cavs. I can't pretend I'm an expert on all these players around the league. So, but he was more of a playmaker, I think, setting guys up than I expected, which I really liked. But some of his, you know, and we did need a guy who could create his own shot, and he can. Some of those shots are bizarre and awkward and uncomfortable. So, you know, I think we were better off than not having him in a vacuum. But I don't know. I don't know that he needs to be on the roster next year, to be frank.
Yeah, he did not have a very...
In a world where we have Colin Sexton back, I guess.
Right. Yeah, Caris LeVert just did not have a very aesthetically pleasing game. For me, I got nervous every time I was watching him dribble. I felt like he did not have a very tight handle. And just some of the shots, like you said, the awkwardness. And boy, he struggled last night, I felt like, with Trey. And I got really frustrated that, you know, you could see Atlanta's plan was to just hunt pick and rolls to get switches. And there were scenarios where, you know, LeVert was guarding him. They'd set a pick out high and the Cavs would switch. And it was just a part of the floor where I was like, you don't need to be switching there. You know, you're on the floor right now because we're counting on you to try to slow Trae Young down. You can't keep getting switched off like that. I don't know if that was a tactical thing that the Cavs were, that was what they wanted there or what, but it just, you know, kept getting into these switches that were just killing us left and right. That was really frustrating to watch. And, you know, Lauri Markkanen, God bless him. I mean, he played his ass off, but I mean, he can't keep Trae Young in front of him. He cannot.
He can't. Really.
Yeah, there are a lot of things I felt like marketing could do that were useful, and that's not it. So
that's not in the tool belt.
It is not. Man, it's just bigger picture. I'm so bummed out. I mean, it felt like last night, you know, somebody said this on Twitter, and it really resonated with me. It just, that game felt like a microcosm for the entire season. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, they got off to this great start and then it just slowly kept slipping away, and it was like watching a ship take on water, you know. And all year, especially down the second half of the season, I just kept hoping that it's like, hold on, and just if we could just hang in there and get to a point where we could get some semblance of our core group back together, let's see what we can do in a playoff series. And I know long term, the Cavs are probably better off getting their lottery pick. I think there's like a 97% chance or something it's going to end up being the 14th pick. And
right.
So, you know, you could pretty much assume that's where they're going to land. And
never bet against this team in the lottery, my friend.
that is true.
There's one thing we do.
Oh, yeah. I just, you know, this whole second half of the season, I just, you know, it went from thinking they could get a top seed and possibly make it out of the first round to, you know, weeks of just hoping to get a top six seed so we could avoid the play-in to, all right, well, if we're going to be in the play-in, let's hopefully get, you know, a seventh or eighth seed so that we can get two shots at getting into the playoffs. And then even once we get into the play-in tournament, you know, you think about, I mean, you look at like the West. I mean, the Pelicans are in the playoffs now, even though I think they finished the season with 36 wins because, you know, they played a Spurs team that was, I think, like what, 10 games under 500 or something like that. And then they got the Clippers without Paul George. Whereas the Cavs, even in a play-in scenario, had to deal with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, which, I'm sorry, a team with those two guys, there's no way in hell they should ever be in a play-in. And then after that, their fallback was dealing with Trae Young and a team that was in the conference finals last year. It was like there was just never a break coming.
My two sports are football and basketball. So I'm Browns and Cavs much more than baseball at the Guardians. And I just feel like, can we ever, you know, we're in the loaded East, we're in the loaded AFC. I'm sick of it.
I know. And injuries, I mean, injuries torpedoed the Browns season. And, you know, I mean, you could even make a case that it really hindered the Guardians last summer too. And I'm tired of watching my team get decimated by injuries, no matter what the season is.
You feel so good about where this Cavs team is going, even without like major moves, just all these young, I mean, they're so young, right? They went through last night. They're 22, 23, even Allen's 24.
Right.
They should just keep getting better. They seem like hard workers. And you're like, well, you know, they're going to get decimated by injuries next year.
Yeah. We need to talk about Jared Allen, by the way, because that dude is a gamer. You could tell pretty clearly he was not right. And
right.
I mean, he still put up a very respectable stat line. And if you just looked at a box score, you'd be like, oh, well, they got a nice lift from him. But if you were watching the game, you know, I mean, it was a bad sign to me when, you know, well, first off, he gets stuck in traffic trying to come to the game, and he didn't even get to the arena until it was like an hour before tip off. But then they showed like during the pregame, him walking in and he's wearing a hoodie, and he kept his left hand in the front pouch of the hoodie. And as he's like high-fiving people walking down the hallway, he wouldn't take his left hand out of his pocket. And then as he like gets on the floor before the game, you know, everybody's dapping each other up right before tip off. Again, he's like holding his left hand away from everybody. And then, you know, there was that, he had that one dunk where he like came flying down the lane and was going to crush it with two hands. And like right at the last second, you see him like, uh-oh, wait a minute, my left hand is messed up. And he pulled his left hand away. He still made the dunk, but it was like, all right, he very clearly isn't right here. And, you know, had that not been a do-or-die game, I don't think there's any chance he's on the floor last night.
No, it clearly wasn't time yet. But, you know, everyone acted appropriately, I think. It was do-or-die. He's a gamer. You know, this team means a lot to him. He did what he could, so... You know, with a lot of this Cavs season and these injuries, there's you can just only be mad at the situation, which is, right. I guess, better than being mad at the team. I mean, I might never forgive J.B. Bickerstaff for running Ricky Rubio into the ground that game he got hurt, but getting off topic. So, yeah, Allen was an emotional lift, but it just felt like it wasn't going to be enough. It wasn't.
No. No, I mean, it's getting back to what I was saying before. My whole mindset over the last 6 weeks was just find a way to get into the playoffs with your core guys back. And I just wanted to see what this team could do. I mean, we never really got to see the Cavs with, you know, with LeVert. I mean, he played obviously, right. But right. Having their whole core together, even setting aside, you know, Colin Sexton and Ricky Rubio, just, you know, what they had envisioned their team looking like when that, for the remainder of this season, when they traded for Caris LeVert, you never really got that. I think like LeVert only played with Allen, Garland, and Mobley four games or something like that before the All-Star break. Well,
then I was going to say, did we ever see the starting lineup we saw last night?
No, I don't think so. Cause I'm pretty sure.
I don't
sure,
think so either. Cause Markkanen was out.
Right. And you know, for a while they were starting Okoro and, right. I think they probably were thinking at some point down the stretch this was going to become the starting five, but they never really got to run it out there. So, I wanted to see what they could look like with that group, you know, what they had envisioned that team being for the remainder of this year. And I felt like if they could get everybody back, you know, maybe they don't get out of the first round, but I felt like they could have been one of those teams that was a pain in the ass for a top seed. And I could like envision a scenario. There's a parallel universe out there where the Cavs make the first round of the playoffs and they find a way to steal a game in Miami. They, you know, get a huge charged up crowd in game three at home. They go up 2-1 in that series. And all of a sudden you're seeing talking heads saying, oh, you know, this team, they, you know, think back to what they looked like early in the season when they were among the best teams in the East. And now they got these guys together and, you know, maybe they don't finish off that series, but they could have made it interesting. And it just, it stinks that we're not going to ever really see what it could have been.
Yeah, you know, I think we texted earlier in the week, and I'm kind of the king of, like, I'm always to a fault thinking long-term over a year where, like, even if things go as well as possible, I don't think my team is winning a title. And so I'm like, man, maybe we're better off with that lottery pick, and I don't know, blah, 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 blah. But then watching last night, man, I finally got to where I wanted it so bad, even if a series against the Heat might have been ugly, I wanted it so bad. So I agree. I came around to that. I'm just so disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, 44 wins, it was a huge leap up, and I'm sure the further we get away from this, the more we'll appreciate what the season was and just how much they were able to accomplish, you know, given that they were, you know, just one setback after another. It was crazy.
I mean, Tom, I like what, you know, I liked where they're headed. I liked what they did in the offseason. I didn't think they'd become a point of viewing again, and they were, man. I love, especially in the first half, obviously. I mean, you just didn't want to miss a minute of this Cavs team. And we can't lose sight of that. That was really awesome to have that again without LeBron James, you know, which is, you kind of weren't sure you'd ever be like that again.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, that's something that Travis and I had talked about earlier in the season. And that's a drum I've been banging for a while, just how important it is for the franchise to be able to carve out an identity as a winning team. Even if you're not necessarily a title contender just yet, just being able to be a respectable team and not being viewed as one of the five worst teams in the league in a season when you don't have LeBron. It's just their identity as a functional franchise has been so tightly linked with LeBron James for the better part of 20 years. You know, you needed that even this year, you know, as the Lakers were stumbling around, you know, you people who have been kind of conditioned that, hey, it's either the Cavs with LeBron or a contender, or without him, they're not. You know, they were arguing. Right. You see the discussions of, like, how could we get LeBron back? And it's like, you know, ultimately, the long-term health of this team, you need to be able to build an identity without LeBron James. No matter how much I appreciate everything he did while he was here, you know, and it's like, at some point, you got to move on. And this season was a huge step towards that.
No question. It really was a delight. I mean, it just, you know, we're obviously bitter and angry and sad and everything this morning, but this season was so important, I think, for the trajectory of this franchise in the next few years and what they could be. I mean, you know, I think objectively we should have been on national TV a few more times. They should have chosen to put us on national TV a few more times before the year even started. But like you said, there's the perception what we are. I mean, we have to be on TV a lot next year. I mean, Mobley, Allen, Garland, they're super fun to watch, even if you're not a Cavs fan.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the Cavs, I mean, it won't be like the LeBron days when they got their max number of national TV appearances, 30, 32, whatever it was. But I bet they get 5 or 6 at least. You know, you got
at least.
I would certainly hope so.
I mean, if you don't love watching Darius Garland play, I think there's something wrong with it. I mean, you know, I've been on Darius Garland Island for a long time, but I think everyone's got to love watching that kid play. He alone is worth tuning in for.
Huge leap from him this year. I'll be honest. You've been on the Darius Garland bandwagon from day one, and coming into this year, I was a little nervous about him. I felt like, especially his rookie year, he was kind of passive and, you know, it looked a little tentative, relying a little too much on those floaters and not, you know, pulling the trigger from deep enough. And, you know, if you look at the first few weeks of this season, when they did have Colin Sexton, Darius's numbers were good. And it's encouraging, that small sample size, to say, hey, you know, these guys can be compatible together. But I do feel like the silver lining of this, you know, losing Sexton for most of the year, it did feel like it kind of forced Darius to take on more of a load and assert himself more. And he really took off during that time. And I think that's huge for, you know, his growth this year really mirrored the team as a whole. So I'm super excited for where he's at now. You know, you could definitely see Darius Garland as a perennial all-star type. And yeah, I mean, he's just fun to watch. So that's good.
And I do know. So I was the king of, for Darius to develop, you got to get the ball out of Sexton's hands. And I didn't know if that meant, you know, I was a big proponent of, you know, trying to make him the sixth man of the year type. But I think the narrative, it's an easy narrative to say that that's why Darius blossomed and Sexton went down. But you kind of hinted at this. I think they were playing together in a way I hadn't seen at the beginning of this year. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of it, I think they went to more of a motion offense. And I think Sexton really fit in. I think Sexton did better with the ball out of his hand a little more than it used to be than I would have guessed. And so I flipped from like, I don't know, you might need to get rid of Sexton in the name of Garland. Now I'm like, man, you really could have used Sexton as the season went on, obviously, especially when Rubio went down. So
sure could have used him last night.
You just have to have the ball in Garland's hands more. I mean, that's just easy.
Yeah, you could see it last night where, boy, having Colin Sexton out there would be nice. Literally anybody else who could score and create a shot for themselves to take a little bit of the burden off of Darius, that'd be good. So
yeah, that would be nice. Don't you know that you're
a grown up? I'm a grown up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days being a grown up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right. I've never done it.
Right. Man, I saw people already starting to post their tankathon simulations for the lottery. I'm not there yet. I can't do that yet. I can't bring myself to start looking at lottery projections already. And it sucks that we're probably a solid 2 months away from any sort of significant developments happening with this Cavs team while the playoffs play out. I kind of wish we could just sim through the playoffs and get to the summer so we could figure out Absolutely. What's next. But I'm really interested to see what the summer looks like and what the Cavs are going to do. I think they got the proof of concept that the core that they've got in place is, extremely encouraging. But there's definitely some work with the supporting cast that I think is going to need to be done. And I'm very curious to see how the Cavs approach this offseason. What do you expect? What are you hoping for? What are we going to see over the summer?
Well, I just want to say, Connor, you talk about sort of flipping the narrative for the rest of the NBA world about what the Cavs can be without LeBron. Hats off to Kobe Altman. He flipped the narrative for me as far as what I think he is. I know he's above GM now, but I wasn't wowed by him. But now you look back at these young players he's added. Mm-hmm. And, you can criticize the Dylan Windler pick and this or that, but like, I think if you can have this, you can have something else. I'll take this. I think he's done a terrific job. What I want, again, probably to a fault, I've always wanted when we have a good point guard to have a really strong second point guard. I just think it's so valuable. And that's why I was excited about the Ricky Rubio trade, but then it was even more than I could have wildly imagined. So I don't know. I don't know how soon Rubio is going to be ready to play after his injury and what percentage of his old self he'd be. So I don't know whether it's worth signing him, but I would like to sign somebody like that who can really, so the offense doesn't fall off a cliff when Garland gets rest. That's my number one priority. And then, just filling in these other spots, I don't know if Chetty's still under contract for longer than I thought, I guess. But I thought maybe we'd see the last of him, try to upgrade there. I don't know, but we go ahead.
I would be pretty surprised if Jetty's back next year.
Right.
It does not seem like that's a guy that's in the long-term plans for the Cavs. I'm really going to be interested to see what they do with Isaac Okoro. I want to like him, but man, it just, you got to show me something more than what we've seen so far. And, you know, given the circumstances of the world at the time he came into the league, it was not exactly an ideal situation to start an NBA career. But when they got down to do or die time, it definitely seemed like they did not trust him yet. And if you're looking to swing a trade to try to bring in maybe a more, you know, two way, you know, more, a bigger threat two ways on the wing, you know, get a small forward and maybe, you know, shift Markkanen to like that first big off the bench. I could see Okoro being a centerpiece of a trade that they send out to try to get a good player in return.
I certainly could see that. I guess my guess is that, like, because you still control him for 2 years, I believe he's making basically $7 million next year. My guess is you just keep developing him and nothing happens with Okoro. But I certainly agree that, you know, he's not untouchable in a trade like some of these other guys are. And if it's time to start bringing, you know, you're so young, if it's time to start trading in youth for a little bit more experience, yeah, he makes a ton of sense in a trade. So it will be interesting, but I can't help but root for that kid. And I know if he doesn't ultimately work out, it won't because he didn't give his all and stuff. So I'm a little in the tank for Okoro in a way that makes me not objective, I guess.
Yeah, he's a likable dude. Really, I mean, that was one of the things that I think in general about this Cavs team this year is just everybody on this team really seemed likable. It was just a good group, and it was fun to cheer for them. You know, LeVert drove me nuts at times with some of his decision making, but I mean, that's picking nits. It was just such a, the makeup of this team and the core guys, they're so easy to root for. I mean, like you talked about Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, all these dudes, franchise is in a good place when those guys are the faces of your team.
I couldn't agree more. This year felt like, we know it's pro sports. We know these guys, including the Cavs, are making millions of dollars, but they really did give off the vibe of just having a great time out there, loving each other, loving playing for each other, having each other's back. I don't know how long that lasts, you know, things evolve, but I just absolutely loved it. And that's why it's so hard to see this season come to an end and just sticking with your theme of what do we do and guys who maybe fit in better than you thought. What do you do with Kevin Love now? He's got what, one more year at about 30 million and, or I guess 25. What a great story he was this year. But is he on the roster next year, do you think?
That's a great question. He certainly seemed to reinvent himself. And, I mean, if you want to talk about the benefit of having a team with good vibes, I mean, he's Exhibit A. I mean,
right.
I don't think it's any secret. Right. He's been miserable for the past few years and wanted to get out of here. Oh, and the only reason...
Didn't notice.
Yeah, what was your first clue?
You had to really squint at it.
I know, but, you know, had he made himself even semi-functional, maybe they could have traded him sooner. The only reason he was still here is because between injuries and everything else, nobody's wanted him. And, you know, going to the bench this year, it was really easy to see where that could go south, even further from where the relationship with him had been. And, you know, credit to him, he really bought into his role. And just really reinvented who he was as a player. And honestly, I think he deserves some Sixth Man of the Year consideration. It's probably going to go to Tyler Hero from Miami, which is kind of dumb considering he plays starters minutes for them, even though he technically isn't a starter. But, you know, in terms of next year, I don't know. I think Kevin Love will be back. I wouldn't be stunned if they find some way to move on from him. But in a world where
let's say we trade for a three who makes more sense than what we have now, and Markkanen becomes that first guy off the bench, that's where I think you're back in the business. If you can get anything for Love and someone to take that contract, maybe it's more appealing. But yeah, in a world where we don't do that, I love Love as kind of the first big off the bench.
Yeah, you know, the other thing is that, you know, is he happy if he gets shuffled, you know, another spot down the bench? But then the flip side of that is, look at all the injuries they went through this year. And, you know, nobody wants to talk about this, but that's not a one-year aberration for the Cavs. They've gotten hit hard by injuries several years in a row now. And, you know, it was a little different when they were in tank mode and they didn't have any sort of aspirations of going anywhere and making the playoffs. And it really only became glaring this year because they were trying to hold on to a playoff spot. And I don't know, maybe in past years they were a little more cautious with some of their guys because they knew they weren't trying to win immediately. But, you know, the idea that, oh, yeah, we'll just, you know, run it back next year and there's no way we could have injury luck as bad again next season. You know, I
laugh at the suggestion.
There's no guarantee that that's going to be the case. And, you know, you could see a situation where having depth is really important. You know, if we looked at this year like, oh, my God, what are they going to do with all these bigs they've got on their roster? And by March, we were starting Miles Brown. Was that I can't even I'm blanking on his name now, but
you're close anyways. I don't know.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Moses Brown. I'm sorry. Yeah.
It sounded right to me. I don't know.
Yeah. And
we're doing the best we can this morning.
We are. So, I don't know. I guess that's the one thing, aside from roster construction, that if I'm the Cavs, you know, yeah, some of the injuries you can probably attribute to just fluky bad luck, but I'm doing everything I possibly can. From looking at strength and conditioning to maybe seeing if we could borrow the sage that Kyrie Irving burns walking around the court to get rid of the bad vibes. I'm leaving no stone unturned when it comes to trying to improve player health for next year, because you cannot go through this again with having your roster torpedoed this hard. And, you know, it was probably even heightened this year because the Cavs really in that stretch in late December got hammered hard by COVID, which hopefully is not an issue next year. But yeah, the injuries, man, you got to do everything you can to try to minimize the risk of that as best you can.
You probably know better than I, but I feel like the Suns and or the Heat, you know, have these great reputations for how they for that area of their franchise. And if you're not already doing everything you can to mimic the best teams in the league when it comes to strength, conditioning, health, you should be. But for all I know, they are. So I don't know.
Yeah, 100%. I think you're right about Miami. I know you're right about Phoenix, that they've had a great reputation for that for years. So we'll see. But I don't know, man. I'm bummed out that playoffs are going to be starting up this weekend here and the Cavs are not part of it. Definitely felt like they deserved to be for the season they had, but you know, we'll get back at it next year. And I can't wait for next season to start.
It's so easy to think about. I mean, there's next year. Then I keep thinking about what year three Evan Mobley might look like. And it's so, I mean, year two might be exciting enough, but like, give that guy more polish and some practice at the free throw line. And he might just be a near unstoppable force. I mean, you know, as much as I love Darius Garland's the reason I tune in, he's my favorite Cav. I love watching him, his aesthetics are everything I like, but like, I mean, Mobley is the real deal. And maybe an even bigger key to the future. So it's a time to be excited.
Yeah. It's not hard at all to envision Evan Mobley being a super duper star in the league. He's got all the tools. And you know, what was really exciting for me watching him was there are things that he was showing this year that are the types of skills that you don't normally see guys really start to show until like their second or third year. The way he defended this year and was so good at shutting opposing players down without fouling, like that is really hard to do. And I think that it's important to develop a reputation as he's going to become known around the league now as he's a guy that can defend without fouling. You know, like there's certain guys.
You're a ref, you give him the benefit of the doubt. Yeah,
that's right. Cause like there are certain guys that, you know, like you know, what we talked about the way it goes the other way offensively with the grifting and, you know, oh, well, Trae Young missed that layup. Somebody must've made some contact with him. So, he's going to, we got to give him free throws. Well, it's like, you know, Evan Mobley, the inverse of that can be true. Well, this is a guy that we know doesn't foul a lot. So that block that he just put up, you know, that must have been clean. That must have been legit. So
you talk about last night's game being a microcosm of the season. That block he had last night that, you know, a foul wasn't called. I think he basically kind of pinned the ball at the bottom of the
It looks like the dude had a breakaway. Yeah, I went crazy. That was unbelievable.
Incredible.
Yeah. Man, goddamn, let's get it going again. I can't wait for next season.
Oh, I can't wait. Let's run it back. You know, and I do think this team will look largely the same, and I can't complain. I love these guys, so let's do it.
Yeah. Well, Mez, this has been cathartic for me. I needed this after how down I was.
I feel a little better, yeah.
Yeah, I do. So thank you. I appreciate it. I'm in a better place now than I was 40 minutes ago when we started this.
Well, you're welcome, and thanks for having me. It was a blast, and it's a nice way to wrap up a really fun season, even if last night's a tough pill to swallow.
Definitely. All right, as a reminder, you could subscribe to The Nail in the Coffin on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other podcast listening platforms. We are part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and we're also on waitingfornextyear.com. Thanks again to Mark Mazaros for joining us. It's been The Nail in the Coffin. We'll catch you again soon.
Get ready, race fans, because the ultimate NASCAR experience is about to hit the airwaves. Welcome to Pit Pass NASCAR, the podcast that takes you deep into the heart-pounding world of NASCAR racing.
Join us each week as we bring you closer to the NASCAR action with exclusive interviews and all the news and rumors you need with your favorite drivers, team members, and industry insiders.
So whether you're a fan of super speedways, short ovals, or road racing, or you've just watched Talladega Nights, Pit Pass NASCAR is the podcast you've been waiting for.
Get ready to fuel your passion for NASCAR like never before. Subscribe now to Pit Pass NASCAR on your favorite podcast platform or head to evergreenpodcast.com and get ready to join us.
Launching in the fall on Evergreen Podcast Network. Follow us on social media at pitpass_NASCAR to stay up to date with everything you need to know about the podcast.